Jean-Paul Sartre famously said, "Hell is other people." You've probably heard that somewhere before. And it sounds antisocial, but he wasn't talking about connection itself. He was talking about being trapped inside of other people's judgments. So in his play, No Exit, the three people who are trapped in a room with each other aren't there for company. It's actually endless personal scrutiny without relief. It's being seen constantly and defined permanently with no room to change. And that matters now because we're living in this time where we are more visible than ever, and yet somehow we're less connected. Other people can absolutely be hell, right? But they're also the only thing that makes meaning possible in the first place. So the problem isn't really connection itself. It's connection without depth or escape, or without forgiveness, which raises the uncomfortable question we don't ask enough. How do you stay human in relation to others without letting their gaze swallow you whole? I don't think there's ever been a time where or when it's easier to talk to people and harder to feel like anyone's actually there. It's very weird. So you can message half a dozen people before you've even had coffee and bounce between conversations all day and still feel like you're just moving through life more or less disconnected. Not ignored exactly, or abandoned, just barely acknowledged. Like a receipt email you didn't ask for, but technically counts as customer service. Which might actually be worse when you think about it. So that's what I want to talk about. This modern solitude and connection and disconnection. And it's the quiet, respectable kind that you don't complain about because on paper, your life looks socially functional. But underneath, you sense that you're in some, it's like some subtle alternate reality that almost feels like a metaphysical uncanny valley. Okay. So something important is happening to us. Not so much biologically, not yet anyway. I mean, we're still the same anxious, approval-hungry primates, just with better lighting and worse attention spans. But socially, something is definitely shifting. Humans have always been regarded as social animals, but that is definitely changing fast. And I wouldn't say because we consciously chose it. It's because our environment and our systems are influencing and nudging us in that direction. So the real question isn't whether this is good or bad. It's whether a human psyche can actually adapt and thrive under these conditions. Or if it just learns how to cope quietly and call that growth. So most people aren't isolated in the traditional sense. They're not off-grid in a cabin, eating canned beans, arguing with a radio or something. They're immersed in group chats and podcasts, and, podcasts running in the background so that the silence doesn't get too confident. I mean, there's no shortage of noise these days. And yet, very few people feel held or cared about. And by that, I mean, someone would actually notice if you vanished tomorrow. And someone who understands your internal weather without needing a bullet point update. Maybe someone who's seen you unfiltered and didn't immediately rethink their schedule. I think you get the idea. That kind of connection is becoming a lot harder to come by now, because modern life, it seems to quietly reward relationships that are low effort and easy to abandon. So we're optimizing social life for convenience, which is great for systems, but not so great for nervous systems. And I don't think this was necessarily intentional. It just unfolded through our technological and societal changes, but was eventually, I would say, insidiously exploited for profit. And at some point, needing people became embarrassing. Depending on others, that felt risky. Wanting depth started to sound a lot like a lot to ask for, which really is kind of modern code for please don't. So we've started to adapt, and we've learned to keep our needs manageable. We kept our expectations flexible and our connections basically optional, which sometimes is independence, but it can also look a lot like social dehydration. I mean, you're functioning. Technically, you're just not sure why you're so exhausted. So I think one of the strangest things about modern solitude is that it doesn't really look like isolation. It looks busy. Like a phone that won't shut up, or a needy ex who somehow discovered your number. Most people aren't lacking interaction. They're drowning in it. They're just starving somewhere else. And, we've built this environment that's socially stimulating, but it's become emotionally non-committal. So, yeah, we have a crisis of emotional unavailability on our hands. So we're engaging and responding without investing in or revealing anything, which means you can be present without actually showing up. There's a lot of that going on now. And the system works beautifully for efficiency. So you can maintain dozens of weak ties with very little cost. You can disappear for days and reappear with a meme. You can leave relationships half finished and call it drift instead of a loss. And it seems that like nothing really breaks. Nothing confronts you. And I think that's exactly the problem. Because real connection isn't frictionless. It's supposed to interrupt you, and it requires repair. It asks you to stay when you know it'd just be easier to ghost, or at the very least, exit politely. So there was a time when community was based primarily on geography. We didn't have the internet. You were pretty much stuck with your neighbors, whether you liked them or not. Now, it's optional, which sounds great until you realize optional is just another word for disposable. So instead of removing connection, we've removed obligation, which sounds like freedom, and sometimes it is, but it also means a lot less relationships have any real gravity anymore. And this is why modern solitude feels confusing. You're not alone in the obvious way. You're just not anchored. So you exist in constant social contact, but without social containment. There's plenty of touch points, but there's very few touchstones. And you don't feel abandoned so much as you just feel vaguely unaccompanied, which is loneliness for people who still have decent Wi-Fi, which is really most people these days, I guess. So now we've got endless hyperconnectivity, but is it eliminating loneliness? No. But it does anesthetize it. It keeps you occupied enough not to notice what's missing, which is comforting right up until the moment you actually need somebody. And that's when you realize how many connections just disappear the second you require or they require some actual effort. It's not because people are horrible. It's because the environment trained us to keep everything light enough to set down instantly, like emotional IKEA furniture or something. So this is where the idea of this rapid evolution starts to make some sense, and not biological, behavioral. We are quickly and alarmingly adapting to a world where deep social bonds are becoming a lot harder to form and to maintain. So we learn to be more self-contained, or developing lower expectations and a higher tolerance for distance. And for a while, it works. It even feels good. You're less entangled. You don't need as much from people, which means people can't disappoint you as easily. And from a certain perspective, it's a real benefit. But it comes with a trade-off. Because when you train yourself to not need connection, you don't just lose vulnerability, you lose nourishment. kind that only comes from being known over time. So when people hear the word evolution, they usually imagine something slow and kind of majestic, right? This isn't that. I think what we're watching looks more like a behavioral speedrun. It's really just a few decades of environmental pressure and a species saying, okay, fine, I'll adjust. And not because it's better, but because it works well enough not to kill us immediately. Humans didn't suddenly decide they don't need each other. We just discovered we could get by with less. And the system rewarded us for it, like a drunk parent praising you for staying quiet. And you learn pretty quickly that needing people is an inconvenient pain in the ass, but you don't really understand why. It introduces vulnerability, and it opens a door to disappointment, which everyone is very tired of managing. Like, we all collectively decided feelings are a hobby we tried once in college and never got good at it. So you adapt and you outsource emotional processing to podcasts, therapists, journaling apps, and maybe the occasional documentary you pretend counts as intimacy because you cried a little and nobody saw. And it's not that you don't have feelings. You just file them away more efficiently now. You know, somewhere between your tax receipts and all the passwords you're never going to remember. It seems to me that we're adapting behaviorally to an environment our biology didn't design. Primally, our bodies are still expecting us to be in tribes, but our lives are now delivering interfaces. So we compromise. Kind of like marrying someone you don't really love because the lease is already signed. And we're learning to soothe ourselves instead of each other. Thus becoming very good at being fine. Fine is like the emotional equivalent of holding your breath underwater and calling it swimming. I mean, you can do it for a while, and people might even compliment your form, but eventually you come to the surface or you drown, and I'd wager that both options are going to be pretty embarrassing at a pool party. And all right, here's the uncomfortable part. This adaptation, it's not a moral failure. It's a survival response. I mean, nobody wakes up thinking, today I'm going to emotionally distance myself from the entire human race. It's more like you kept getting burned touching the stove, so you stopped cooking. And now you just eat cereal for dinner and you call it minimalism. So what's happening is we're becoming the kind of people who can go weeks or even months without any meaningful human contact and only notice because the barista remembered our order and it felt like a small miracle. But evolution, even the behavioral kind, it doesn't care if you're comfortable. It only cares if you survive. And I don't know if we're surviving this or just getting better at not noticing that we're slowly dying inside. You know, it's like the frog in a pot that's slowly heating up, except the frog has a smartphone and keeps telling itself it's fine because at least the Wi-Fi is good. Okay. So before this turns into a eulogy for community, I think it's worth saying that we didn't adapt this way for no reason. Something about becoming less socially dependent, it does make modern life more survivable. Kind of like learning to drink alone. It's not ideal or advisable, but at least you don't have to split the bottle or listen to someone's rambling thoughts on NFTs or whatever. And when you need fewer people can't disappoint you. I mean, that's not cynicism. That's just math. So lower dependency means fewer emotional negotiations, fewer obligations you secretly resent, fewer situations where you have to pretend you're fine just to keep the social machinery running. And yeah, there's relief in that because you get more control. You get more freedom to opt out of interactions that feel draining and performative or vaguely like unpaid emotional labor. And I get it. For anyone who's ever gone home from a great night feeling inexplicably exhausted, like you just ran a marathon in someone else's shoes, this shift can actually feel like progress. And let's be honest, a lot of past so-called community was just enforced proximity with better public relations. You didn't really love your neighbor. You just couldn't afford to piss them off because, well, they were the only one who had a tractor for 15 miles. So, yeah, I mean, becoming less social does have its perks. You're less enmeshed. You're less pulled into other people's emotional weather, like you're some kind of unpaid meteorologist for everyone's bad moods. And you probably feel calmer and cleaner, more contained, a little lonelier maybe, but also, again, more in control, which is comforting until you realize that control is just another word for no one's getting in. So the problem isn't that this is bad. It's the problem is that it's incomplete because autonomy, it is stabilizing, but it isn't nourishing. I mean, self-sufficiency might keep you functioning, but ultimately, it doesn't replace being known. You're missing that deeper connection. And control reduces some chaos, yes, but it also covertly reduces intimacy until you're living in a very antiseptic, very empty room, wondering why everything feels like a waiting area. So you wind up protecting yourself right into a very tidy kind of emptiness. This would be the kind where everything works and nothing matters. Where you're safe, but you're not really alive. And I think that's the tension that we're sitting in now. We've traded intensity for manageability and depth for efficiency. We've given up those messy bonds for cleaner, faster exits. And it's understandable. I mean, it's even rational. It just isn't free. Because everything you don't feel eventually comes due. And the bill for emotional self-sufficiency is that one day you wake up and realize you've become so good at not needing anyone that you just forgot how. And by then, it's not a skill anymore. It's just who you are, who you've become. So what we lose in this shift doesn't just disappear with some big dramatic explosion. It just gradually fades. Like slow carbon monoxide poisoning, but for your social life. You're not physically dying, of course. You're just becoming slower and more dead inside. But there's this misconception people have, thinking that you're more centered now, so it must be growth. So the first thing we lose in is relational endurance, which is the ability to say, it's the ability to stay in something mildly uncomfortable without immediately reassessing whether it's still worth our time. And that sounds healthy, but at some point you understand that most meaningful relationships have long stretches where they're neither rewarding nor Instagrammable. They're just there, occasionally annoying you. Think of it like a plant that you forgot to water, but somehow hasn't died yet. And now you just resent it for needing attention. And when connection becomes optional, repair becomes optional too. So when something feels off, instead of working through it, you drift. You courteously disengage and tell yourself it was mutual. It's basically conflict avoidance with a decent publicist. You just quietly let people fall out of your life, like old subscriptions that you just forgot to cancel. And the worst part is you're kind of relieved, because now you don't have to text them back. Another thing that happens is we lose the experience of being known over time. Not seen, known. I mean, you can be seen by thousands of people who wouldn't recognize your grief if they tripped over it. But being known, on the other hand, that requires repetition. It requires history. Someone remembering who you were before you learned how to curate yourself into something, you know, marketable. And, you know, we've replaced it with updates and highlight reels. Carefully crafted summaries where we appear to be thriving, but we're really just good at editing. And then there's the quiet erosion of trust that happens, where you just stop expecting anyone to really show up anymore. You assume people mean well, but they just, well, they're just busy, tired, overwhelmed, working on themselves, which is just modern code for, I can't handle one more thing and you might be that thing. So you adjust your expectations downward. You stop reaching. You become almost toxically reasonable. You don't ask for anything, which is exactly how you end up with nothing. And the cruel irony here is that none of this feels dramatic. You're not devastated. You're basically functional. You have routines, but you just don't feel like you matter. And after a while, you stop noticing that as a loss. You start calling it independence and maturity. And in some ways, that's true. But maybe you've become just a little too good at building a life that doesn't require anyone to notice if you disappeared. All right. Here's something that nobody really wants to admit. A life without any friction isn't actually peaceful. It's flat, mundane. And a life without depth leaves you feeling vaguely hollow or, I don't know, unfinished. It's like a conversation that keeps ending just before it gets interesting. So you learn that reaching for connection is awkward and that wanting more makes you seem needy. And then you stop reaching. And eventually you stop noticing that you stopped. Okay. So let's talk about the introvert perspective here for a minute, because I think there's something we can learn from this about what's happening currently. So introverts didn't predict this moment happening, this situation. They weren't sitting around thinking, one day the world will socially implode and everyone will finally see why I left the party early. But they did stumble into instincts that are suddenly making sense to a lot more people now. Like, it's like how cockroaches accidentally evolved to survive a nuclear holocaust. Except introverts just evolved to survive brunch. So for most of history, introversion has been treated like a defect to be managed. But in this current day and age, that demands, you know, this current day and age, which is demanding constant engagement, those habits look less fragile and more like calibration, because introverts understand, without moralizing, that social energy is finite. They don't confuse busyness with connection. It's honest, even if it looks pessimistic. It's like someone who brings their own food to a potluck because they've been burned before. Extroverts process through people, but introverts process before people. They reflect, they filter, and they choose whether an interaction is worth the cost. And it's not that introverts hate people. It's that they've done the math, and the result is that every conversation has a price. Every social obligation comes with overhead. And at some point, you realize you're spending more energy managing interactions than actually enjoying them. So introverts will cut their losses early. They're not trying to be rude. They're just honest about their limits, which makes everyone else uncomfortable because we're supposed to pretend we have infinite capacity for small talk about the weather. Introverts also care less about visibility. So being liked by 100 people isn't going to stabilize them the way being understood by one or two would. It's like the difference between a spotlight and a lamp. Both provide light, but one doesn't make you want to leave the room. Now, I'm not saying the lesson is to be introverted. I think the lesson is, if we're going to survive this quiet evolution, we really should learn how to be deeply selective about who and how we connect. I mean, maybe this is one of the positives here. Because right now, most of us are connecting like we're at an all-you-can-eat buffet. We're gluttonously sampling everything, committing to nothing, and then leaving feeling vaguely nauseous. Introverts figured out a long time ago that you don't need the whole buffet. You just need one good meal and maybe some alone time afterward to digest it without someone asking how you're doing. Most of us were never taught that connecting well is harder than connecting often, because the system rewards quantity, not quality. And of course, social media has distorted all of this with shallow connection that masquerades as engagement. It also means absolutely nothing when you're having a shitty week and you realize none of these people would notice if you just went silent. I think most of us would agree that meaningful social interaction has real weight, substance. It demands patience, empathy, attention, you know, ingredients in dangerously short supply in a world we've been trained, you know, where we've been trained to swipe past anything that doesn't immediately reward us. Quality over quantity. This is where it's at. Because depth always matters more than reach. One conversation where someone actually hears you is worth more than 50 polite nods in a feed. But learning this skill now is like learning to swim in syrup. You eventually move But it's exhausting as hell and obviously slow. And everyone watching thinks you're doing it wrong. So there's a difference between choosing solitude and being starved for connection. Solitude can definitely be restorative. It's like hitting the reset button on your brain when everything just gets too damn loud. Starvation, on the other hand, just leaves you brittle and oddly anxious while surrounded by people. Like you're hungry, but you can't remember what food even tastes like. I think all this hyperconnectivity is giving us the illusion of interaction, but it's starving our relational needs. It's like eating alone in a crowded food court. Technically, you're surrounded by people, and yeah, technically you're being fed, but something essential is missing. I see solitude as a tool. You choose it, but starvation is a trap that you're not choosing. It just becomes the baseline. And after a while, you stop noticing you're hungry because hunger just becomes normalized. And recognizing the difference is, I mean, it's critical. Because if you can't tell whether you're thriving in solitude or just getting used to being alone, you're not evolving. You're just adapting to a cage and calling that freedom. Okay, so what does adaptation look like without pretending we're all going to hold hands and sing folk songs about authentic connection? Because we're not rebuilding tribes, not anytime soon. I mean, that ship sailed, it sank, and nobody's diving for the wreckage. But I do think you can make some adjustments that don't require overhauling your entire life. Prioritize depth over breadth. One honest conversation beats 10 wellness check-ins where everyone's performing mental health like it's a side gig or something. Stop collecting people and placing them on the back burner. You just, you know, all you need is just a few people who aren't going to ghost you when things get a little messy. And try to protect your attention. I mean, this is a big one. You wouldn't hand your credit card to strangers. So, you know, why? Maybe stop giving your focus away like it's infinite. Treat social energy like it's a phone battery. You've got, I don't know, 25 apps running in the background, and you're wondering why you're running on 1% power. Look, ideally, even hardcore introverts should have one or two people to see them regularly. Just someone who knows your face when you're not pretending. Because if nobody sees you, at least semi-consistently, you start to dissolve into a sort of oblivion. I know this from personal experience. Not physically, of course, but just slowly and quietly, in ways you don't really notice until you're already basically gone. And, you know, real connection isn't smooth either. We're going to have arguments and awkward silences, but that doesn't mean they're always failures. They're proof that something real is at stake. If, you know, if a relationship never makes you uncomfortable, it's probably not real. It's probably just two people being polite until somebody gets bored. None of this is glamorous, but it's survivable. And survival means showing up when it's inconvenient. Staying in the room when shit gets weird. And shit does get weird. You know, we can't fake health with algorithms or motivational quotes on pastel backgrounds, but we can make small changes without moving to a yurt to find yourself. Because in reality, even in the yurt, you're still going to be you, just with worse Wi-Fi and a complicated relationship with composting. And turn off your phone every few hours or for a few hours sometimes. And, you know, not to prove anything, but just to remember what it's like when your attention isn't being auctioned off every 3 seconds. It's also probably a good idea to invest deeply but selectively in one real friendship, if possible. One person who'd show up if things went to hell. Somebody who's seen you at your worst and didn't immediately update their privacy settings. And check your autopilot too. Are you connecting because you want to or because it's convenient? Most of us are still maintaining relationships that died years ago, but nobody bothered to bury. If it doesn't feed you, let that shit go. You're not a hero for suffering through a bad connection. You're just self-abandoning. And try to accept solitude. I mean, some loneliness is inevitable, of course. Stop treating alone time like it's some problem that needs to be solved. You know, sometimes you're just existing. That's fine. It doesn't always mean it's depression. This is just part of the human condition. Look, we're probably never going to go back to a pre-digital world. You know, the past wasn't necessarily better. It was just different, with worse plumbing and more casual racism. But this transition is survivable if we're open-minded enough to accept that we're just adapting to the changing environment and that we do still have some control over what that environment might look like. All right. That's all I got today. As always, thanks for listening.